So, sermon started working on my system about a month ago as I was in dialogue online with ministers. I'm in an interfaith, space on the web that has clergy bantering all kinds of ideas back and forth. And the dialogue focused a lot on, well, what are Protestants doing with the Lent season? And I said, well, Unitarian Universalists may be considered Protestant by some, but I tend to think of us like, if we're Protestants, we're Protestants plus, you know? It's a little more than that. Some of us come from different and various backgrounds, but the denomination, as it's presently constituted, is more like an interfaith space as opposed to liberal Protestant. But it set the mind in motion. I wanted to get a handle on this idea of Lent and why it's important to so many Catholics, so many Anglicans, so many Episcopalians, so many Orthodox. I wanted to remember when I was a boy what it was like going to that Episcopal church, Church of the Intercession at 155th Street in Manhattan, if any of you have ever gone there. Audubon is buried there in that cemetery. It's the only place you can be buried on Manhattan Island anymore, so it's kind of a historic place, and it's a fabulous plant. It's Trinity Church's Northern Cathedral that they then gave to that congregation in the 70s, gave them $2 million and cut them loose. Strange thing. They lost all that money or spent it up. And last year when I went to visit, the sanctuary was dark. They hadn't paid their electric bill. $90,000 in the rear. Funny how you can have this fabulous building and you can't manage it, right? It's not something that happens to only Unitarians. It happens to all kinds of congregations. Nevertheless, this idea took hold. And so here's what I started writing. And if you know me, you know that I'll leave my written word and go with my heart. But here's what it started like. And this is written last week earlier. So today, Ash Wednesday is approaching. The first day of Lent, or the Lenten season, or as it is much commonly known as Quadragesima, if my Latin is anywhere close. I didn't know that myself until I looked it up. So, there it was. The Latin word describes a 40-day period during which Roman Catholics and others have historically abstained from certain foods, or even most foods, in preparation for the highest holy day in the Christian calendar, Easter. For the past few years, I've heard lots of questions being asked about what you're giving up for Lent. I usually shrug it off because I don't give up anything. I'm a, what is that place? I'm a hedonist probably, so I don't give up much. I've been engaging in love and food and all the goodies of life as much as I can, but it's a worthy question. I've also observed more and more that there are people from all walks of life observing the Lenten observation, particularly on social media, on Twitter and Facebook. Just yesterday, and this was last Tuesday, Mardi Tuesday, Mardi Gras. Just last Tuesday, a vice president at Thomas Nelson Publishers posted on his own blog observations about the importance of Lent and what it provides one who observes it. It was interesting. Some, leader of a big industry. Anyway, I must confess a level of confusion surrounding the increasing number of Protestants and non-Christians following Lent. But it's a happening. My understanding as someone that was raised Protestant is that with the Reformation of the 16th century, there existed a schism between those who commune with Rome and those non-Romans. Those who were raised Protestant The people that don't follow the traditional Catholic ways of being do not recognize the Bishop of Rome, or the Pope as he's known. You don't pray to Mary, you don't do the rosary, you don't confess to a priest, you don't attend Mass. What then is the point? What is the value of a non-Orthodox Christian, as I'm going to call them, observing a fast? Now, according to a link that I saw, it said, put on the Lord Jesus Christ. This was in reference to the end of Romans 13, following Paul's instructions in chapter 12 to offer our bodies as a living sacrifice. The tense of this wording was put on, right? It should be understood to mean continually, not just to, like, you can put on your clothing, but to actually behave like it. You know, like you're gonna do this, you're gonna live this, right? It would seem to argue against a singular observation of Christ-like behavior, but a perpetual way of being like this Christ figure, right? And then there's another passage by Paul that seems to contradict this one. For as many of you were baptized into Christ, have put on Christ. The tense here, again, is similar, but this time it is indicative instead of imperative. And I had to ask my sister about this, because I was like, I'm not understanding this. She's an English professor. I'm like, I may break into Ebonics at any moment. I'm a brother from home, so I got to keep it real for me. But I asked her about this, because I'm not understanding, you know? But what I came to understand was Paul means something has happened to those who believe. You know? Something has transformed in you. And it's not something that believers have to obey. He's saying that you are identified by your faith rather than by any adherence to any law. Right? You, as a Unitarian Universalist, not a Catholic, not an Orthodox, are identified. That's what I'm suggesting to you today. You're identified by your faith, not by adherence to any particular set of instructions. And so, what has becoming a UU done for you? Ultimately, I want to know what this faith is doing to you. What are the transformative effects of this denomination on your living substance? Huh? Do you feel different since you became UU? Did you get your swagger back? Did you get your groove on like Stella? Did you find something unique in this faith tradition that you couldn't find anyplace else? I'm wondering about that. There are lots of things that fill my spirit with great joy about being a Unitarian Universalist. And I could give you a laundry list of those things, because I was running away from religiosity until I found this thing, right? But the issue isn't where this zealot, because I'm a UU zealot. I spent $90,000 getting this Master's of Divinity. I'm still paying those horrific student loans off, right? I mean, on and on and on they go. But I'm somebody that lives and breathes for this denomination. It's not about me or the 12 or 1,300 UU ministers there are. We're a bunch of freaks, essentially, right? What about you folks who choose to come here and give your money and your time and your efforts, and most importantly, give your heart to something that you found so unique and so compelling that you came through the doors of some Unitarian Universalist congregation? Hear these other words from Paul. And I got to tell you, I'm not a Paulist. In fact, I wish the Bible was stripped of Paul, because I find him to be schizophrenic or something. One day killing people, the next day loving them up. You know, telling people don't have sex, don't get married, and the time is coming. I think he's the real freak. And the scriptures would be just fine. If it was the stories of Jesus. Have you ever seen Jefferson's Bible? Jefferson does a great work with the Bible. He extrapolates just the teaching things of Jesus. Oh, Rabboni, how you've taught us well. You don't need the miracle stories. You don't need anything but common sense that Jesus gives in abundance in a very short book. I mean, it's really small. But hear these words of Paul, because at times we can use this guy. So you are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, then an heir through God. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to those that by nature are not God's. But now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how can you turn your back again to the weak and worthless, empty principles of the world, whose slaves you want to be once more? You observe days and months and seasons and years. I am afraid I may have labored over you in vain. He was talking to the church in one of the Greek cities. I think it was Corinth. The point being, not that you are a slave to anything, not that you are attached to any singular document. You know, this hymnal, I'd like to get rid of it half the time. The words in it are useful, but it's not what being a Unitarian Universal is about. Lent season, for me then, if you're going to use it at all, is not about giving up something. Oh no, you Unitarian Universalists, don't give up something. I want you to run towards something. If you haven't called your mama because you're fighting over the divorce with Papa, pick up the phone and call her. If you had a fight with your best friend over the one that got away and he or she married her, or she, you know, if something happened to destroy the relationship, now's the time to fix it. If somehow your eating has done damage to your body, I don't say give up food, but let's find the right food for you to eat. You see, this Lent season needs to be turned on its head and become something that's not about giving up what God may have given you, because God's given us much if there be a God, because this world is a beautiful place. That warmth yesterday just filled my heart with joy, because I know spring is coming. I've got daffodils popping up. A song. Birds are back. Have you heard the singing? This warmth is coming back, and it's not just warmth for the external realities of your life. This is the warmth that will imbue you with something to build you up, make you strong, and do the good works. See, the Lent season shouldn't be about, I can't have a drink. I'm not promoting alcoholism now. I didn't say overdo it. But it means you can have a drink with a friend, maybe, that you haven't seen. Run through the door. Pick up the phone. Skype them. FaceTime them. Meet up with somebody. Do something you haven't done before. Come to the Orange congregation and get your hands dirty. The yard is filthy. We got to do something out here. You have to be about something. The Lenten season for 40 days will transform your life if you're willing to be transformed. Be renewed, not by the spirit of something outside of you, but by the spirit that's within you. What's inside of you? Are you alive? Unitarian Universalism gives us a multiplicity of ways to engage spiritual things. If you want to be a Jew, you be there. Engage in what the prophets teach you. If you want to be a Muslim, you wasn't what's your former DRE's name? Aisha Hauser, Muslim from Egypt land. She did a service over in New York about eating pork as spiritual practice. I thought she was gonna get that church bombed. Who in their right mind would say that as a Muslim? But she dared to be different because her faith gave her strength to be bold. Unitarian Universalism ought to give you the strength to be bold, to walk where you haven't walked before, to build something new. Maybe we become the virtual church and we gather on Wednesdays and have a party and break bread here on Sunday just for jazz vespers and invite in the community. I don't know what we're going to become. I don't know what transformation is going to happen here. All I know is that you can use any spiritual tradition within a Unitarian Universalist framework to build your own theology. And we do that together and embrace one another in some profound sense of community. What are we willing to do? Not give up this Lent season. I've been wondering for far too long why people put up with the things they put up with in their spiritual homes. Why they put up with ministers that are either boring or ministers that don't do their job. Or why we allow our houses of worship to fall into disrepair. And then I start to wonder, what's the psychological piece behind it? Are our own lives in disrepair? You see, because if your home is in disrepair, that speaks to a brokenness of spirit. If your personal life is in disrepair, again, it speaks to a level of brokenness. It's not that being broken is bad. Come on, y'all. Everybody's been broken at some point in time. Hell, we got a society of drug abusing folks, whether it be alcohol, heroin, whatever. You have it. Seeking comfort because there's something gnawing at them. Something's not quite right. I've been there. I went down the alcohol highway, had myself a good drinking time. I've been there, smoked a whole pound of weed, was supposed to sell it, was scared to sell it, smoked it. Had a good time, so I thought, but it was about my brokenness. I had a fiance that committed suicide, and so I tried to numb my pain. You see, each of us in our own way numbs our pain, whether it's eating or hiding from the realities of our existence. Each of us is born not with original sin, but with something that's not quite in balance. See, because what human have you ever met that's perfectly in balance? Oh, everything looks good on the outside, but if you talk to the kids, they say dad's a rageaholic in the house, right? Everything looks so right. Oh, could you see Chelsea and Bill and Hillary? But Bill was cheating on Hillary every chance he had, right? It's not what it seems, people. The realities of our existence have more to do with seeking to become that whole person than being that whole person. Doing the spiritual work, combining a mind, body, spirit trinity that will bring us into wholeness, that bring us into that place of security. Using the Lenten season is a start. Almost all of the texts that I can find on making a change say you need to start with 30 days. 30 days begins a transformation, dietary, spiritually, psychologically, emotionally. If you're going to make a change, you've got to give it that first 30 days. Commit to that. Commit to it. And the church, in its ancient wisdom, I'm going to give it some wisdom, said, let's do it for 40 days. Because this 40-day thing is not of Jesus, right? This 40-day thing is not of God. Here comes like a lightning bolt and it's inscribed on each of us. 40 days! No. This is somebody who had some understanding that in order for a human being to be transformed, it's going to take minimally 30 and probably 40, because that first week you're going to waffle. Huh? You're going to waffle on that change. And then you're going to beat yourself up. And then you may re-engage with your whole heart and your whole spirit. So here we are. Unitarian Universalists, trying to understand why we might take on this practice of Lent. Well, here's this one minister's argument for doing it. Do it because at 300,000, we're not strong enough. Do it because here in Essex County, Unitarian Universalism needs to be revitalized in certain of its places. I don't know how the city of Newark doesn't have us, but I know we've got to revitalize this Unitarian Universalism. Free the captives. We've got to free the captives of this county. Something different has to happen. Use this Lenten period to transform yourself, because if you're angry over something that happened, then it's time to run towards forgiveness and healing. If you're upset about something that's happened, it's time to fix it somehow, some way. Get on that road to recovery. See, use the Lent period while the other folks are giving up something, you go get something. This is a good hymn, and if you knew what I'd say, tinker it for me. This is what they do in the black church. When a preacher says something about something, the pianist or the organist tinkers it. There is more love somewhere, and I'm gonna keep on till I find it. There is more love somewhere. Is that number 95? All right, 95. That's a good one for you to have in your opinion. I should have told you before time. You understand, though? Don't look at Lent as something negative that those other folks do. Here's your spring cleaning. Here's your spring into action. Here's your opportunity to have the best spring, summer, and fall you ever imagined. By starting with this 40-day period, get on board, little children. Get on board and have a good Lent season. Amen. Yeah. All right. So I hope we'll talk about that in coffee hour. We should probably have a talk back. I don't know. You guys like talk backs?
Yeah.
You do? Yeah? How's that time? You want to hear? Oh, would you take me there for us? That's a girl.
You want to channel some Negro spirituality
now? Oh! Did you all know we had a fabulous musician in the house?